asked by a very young minister who was just starting off a brand new job why I have stayed in the same place basically my whole adult life. And that's the reason right there. So those kids that I've held some of their parents when they were kids, and to see them grow in their faith and learn so much about God, that's one of the things that brings me great joy. If you're visiting with us, you're seeing family, or if you're traveling through, thank you for being here, and we're so grateful you chose to worship with us for a few minutes here this morning. As Brandon said, the word joy is the word of the day. And there are many things, I think, that bring us joy. Let me give you a few that bring me some joy. When I get to the office, and I say hello to the ladies, and I put my feet up on my desk, and I open a book that matters more to me than anything else, it brings me great joy to spend an hour with a couple cups of coffee and the Father. It brings me great joy. To get in a car and go home and start prepping dinner next to my wife. I'm her sous chef, so I have to cut the onions and the potatoes and do all the nasty stuff. But it brings me great joy. To lay my head down on a pillow and again next to that same woman. To say a final prayer asking God for peace and rest. And to pray over those that matter so much to me, from my children to my church to the community that we live in, brings me great joy. To have those moments when life is hard and when I don't have an answer, oddly enough, that brings me joy. It doesn't bring a smile upon my face the same way it does while cutting an onion, making dinner with Nikki. It doesn't make me think all warm and fuzzy thoughts about marriage and life at the end of a day. But those trials still bring me joy. Because in the midst of that, it is the reminder of what is really behind my joy. That my joy is not found in my children. My joy is not found in my marriage. My joy is not really even found in my job. And all of those things are important and all of those things matters. But my joy is found on a whole different plane that makes everything else even better. And it takes the things that are already incredible and makes them even more amazing. And it takes the things that are unbearable and at least makes them bearable. And that's what joy means to me. Because my joy is found, yes, in the birth of Savior. Kids did a beautiful job singing that. They were cute as always. But my joy is found in his story. My joy is found not only in a way in a manger, so to speak, but my joy is found on a Sunday morning when a rock is removed. And when Mary will walk to go visit someone she loves immensely and cannot find him. And an angel will say, "Do you not know he is arisen?" And my joy is found in Jesus coming to the 11 and saying, "Peace I give to you. Peace I give to you." And my joy is found in Peter saying, "Here's what matters. Jesus, you might have killed him, but God raised him, and now he is at the right hand of God." And you get in Acts chapter 2 a little bit of what we've often called the inauguration of the church. And that brings me great joy. And then I think back to the day when I was 13 and I walked down the aisle as they were singing "Just As I Am." And I knew as I was walking down that aisle as a 13-year-old, as we were singing "Just As I Am," that I was about to make maybe the most important move I would ever make in my life, and that is to choose God over anything else. And then to know that I am saved. Doesn't mean I'm perfect. It doesn't mean I've got everything ironed out. It doesn't mean I still don't wrestle with sin on occasion. But to know, as we've been talking so much in the book of Colossians, to know that I am saved and that heaven awaits me, that brings me joy. And I think bottom line is the natural response to the gospel. The natural response to Jesus coming to be in the flesh, as we would see in John chapter 1, and then to give his life on the cross, and then for God to raise him on Sunday, and for there then to be a people now lined with him, all of that brings a natural response of joy. And it's been my privilege all of my adult life to share that joy with others, mostly with you, to say, look at what God has done. Look at how God has saved us. Look at what God has forgiven. Look how God has built. Look how God has changed. And so joy matters a lot. And so they sang a rather simple song. We're going to sing it again at the very end of this sermon. And we're going to see that there's a lot more to that song than just a little Christmas tune. But that little song, Joy to the World. So the song Joy to the World was actually written in the early 1700s. It was written by a poet by the name of Isaac Watts. If you know anything about the music of the church, Isaac Watts is probably one of the three or four great hymn writers of the 1700s. You would be shocked at the number of songs that we sing that Isaac Watts wrote in the early 1700s. When he decided to write Joy to the World, he based it on a study that he was doing that morning. And so he was reading a psalm, and we're going to read that psalm here in a second, but he was reading a psalm, and in the midst of the reading of that psalm, he said that there's got to be a melody to this. There's got to be some words that I can write that can take what God is doing in the midst of this psalm, and it's going to be Psalm 98, but what God is doing in the midst of Psalm 98 that then I can say to the church, here is where we find joy. And oddly enough, Joy to the World was never intended to be a Christmas song. It was intended to be a worship song. It was intended to be a song that you didn't sing between Thanksgiving and Christmas. It was intended to be a song that you sang all of the time because you realized who God was and what God had done for you. And the background to Isaac Watts' song is the words of this psalmist. I just want you to hear it. I don't want you to read it. I just want you to hear it. Oh, sing to the Lord a new song, for he has done marvelous things. His right hand and his holy arm have worked salvation for him. The Lord has made known his salvation. He has revealed his righteousness in the sight of all the nations. He has remembered the steadfast love that he has and his faithfulness to the house of Israel. And all the ends of the earth have seen the salvation of our God. Make a joyful noise to the Lord, all the earth. Break forth in joyous song and sing praises. Sing praises to the Lord with the lyre and the sound of melody, with trumpets and the sound of a horn. Make a joyful noise before the King, the Lord. Let the sea roar and all that fills it, the world and those who dwell in it. Let the rivers clap their hands. Let the hills sing for joy together before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. And he will judge the world with righteousness and the people with equity. And that's what bore joy to the world. The writer, hearing about God and hearing about God's salvation and hearing about what God has said through the psalmist so many years before him, Isaac Watts says, joy to the world. So let's explore that a little bit. This song reminds me at least of a few things. Not just the song, Joy to the World, but the Psalm 98. It offers first a proclamation of joy because of Jesus. Let me say that again. It offers a proclamation of joy. I guess what I do is a proclamation. I stand and I tell the world, or I tell you. When I hear the story of Jesus, there's nothing else I can do but proclaim it. When I hear the story of not only Jesus, but of what God has wanted to do from the beginning of time, before I was even created, before Adam and Eve were even created, God's plan was, how am I going to save these people? And the answer to how he's going to save those people has always been found in Jesus. And so we proclaim what Jesus has done. We're going to read just one passage from the nativity scene, as we've often called it. But you get this little line from Luke chapter 2, and you get the shepherds. The angel said to the shepherds, "Do not be afraid. I bring you good news that will cause great joy for all of the people. Today in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah. He is the Lord." I love that little line that the angel gives to the shepherds. And when I see this scene, and we're going to explore this scene maybe a little bit more on Wednesday night, but when I see this scene, I see just the shepherds out there doing their stuff. I mean, they're just watching over their sheep. They're just doing what needs to be done, the same thing they've done every single night for most of their lives. And they're kind of probably caught in the mundane of doing this and this and this and this. And then suddenly you get this word from the angel that says, "I'm bringing you some good news." And I think what the angel is saying is, "I'm bringing you the best news of all. And here's what's going to happen. This is going to bring you great joy." When do you need to be reminded of that? When do you need to be reminded that God has brought you great news that brings you great joy? Okay, holidays are hard. Some of you are going to celebrate, have all your children and all your grandchildren gathered around a table, and you're going to cut up a turkey or a ham, or you're going to pass the pumpkin pie, and you're going to laugh. And there are some who won't get that privilege. There are some who are going to have everything in line just the way it should be, and life is floating along perfectly. And Thursday morning, there are going to be some who just got a report from a doctor, who just got a report from a child or from a counselor or from a police officer. And there are going to be these moments in our life where life is grand and it's floating along just the way it should be, but then there are moments where it's not going to be that way, and yet we still offer a proclamation of joy. I have a dear friend who has gone through things that I can't comprehend. And if we were to say his life, we would say he has suffered a bunch of his life. And in the midst of that, he still says, "Even through my tears, and even through my sadness, and even through my brokenness, the fact that God sent his son brings me joy." I want to live that way. Because it's pretty easy for us to be joyous when everything flows around just great. And it's pretty easy to be joyous when life goes just as we have planned, and there's enough money at the end of the month, and all the kids are behaving, and the parents are keeping their line, and I almost said parents are keeping their mouths shut, but that was not the right thing to do, and I should have still not said it. And everything is lined up the way it should be Thursday morning. But joy is so much more than that. And then this song reminds me that we praise. I love the phrase he uses, "with a joyful noise." Go back to Psalm 98 and just notice the beginning of this. Here's what he says: "Shout for joy to the Lord, let all the earth burst into jubilant song." Wow, what a line. Shout for joy to the Lord, let your heart burst with jubilant joy. I think what the psalmist is doing there is he is celebrating God as king, and in that context, God is Savior, and he's looking at all creation saying, "You need to do the same thing. Then you need to realize what God has done. You need to realize what this king has done to save you." And how could we respond any other way than with joy? I was texting with Josh last night because I was going to make fun of him, and I'm still going to make fun of him, but I was texting with Josh, and you know, about 80% of you know Josh Watkins. He worked here for a number of years. Outside of my wife is probably my dearest friend on the whole planet, and remember, he used to make you smile. Do you remember that? He would stand up here and lead songs, and he would stop, and he would say, "Come on, folks, smile." Okay, the reason he wanted you to smile is he wanted you to emulate the joy that should have been in your hearts. That he wanted what was in your hearts because of the music of the church to bubble its way out and to bring a smile upon your face as we sang these great music of the church and as we reminded ourselves of that. And how could we do any less? When we reflect on all that God has done, and we realize that it's through Jesus, and it's through, yes, the story of him coming into the world, but it's so much more than that. That's just kind of the first chapter of the story, that we get this first chapter of the story that says, here comes Jesus, and all the rest of the story builds to that moment when the tomb is empty. I've probably told this story in some form or fashion a couple of other times, but I remember almost 20 years ago now, maybe even longer than that, the movie The Passion of the Christ came out. And for whatever reason, they wanted preachers to see it before anybody else. And so they had a showing here in town. And so Jason and Bill Perkins and I, we all went to go see The Passion of the Christ. And some of you are probably not old enough to have remembered that movie at all. And some of you are, and you remember it was rough, and it was graphic, and it was heartbreaking, and it was full of images that are hard to get out of your head. But at the very end of that story, they have the tomb, and they have the sun coming up over the horizon, and the rock is rolled away, and the sun is shining, and there is Jesus. And I remember sitting, again, in between Bill and Jason Moore, and Jason starts singing, "Why did my Savior come to earth? Why to the humble go? Why did he choose a lonely birth?" And he sang the song that we just sang, oddly enough. Kent didn't even know that. And I still remember him singing that song gently to himself so that no one else could hear, but hearing that voice of a friend saying, here's the reason why, that here's the understanding and the praise that comes out of us with a joyful noise, this understanding of here is God and here is who he is, and how can it not come out of our mouths in those moments? You ever see an old friend? And when you see that old friend, and maybe you haven't seen that old friend for a long time, but you see that old friend, and instantly your heart just kind of bubbles over. That's what our heart should do for Jesus. That every time we're seeing him, and every time we're realizing what he has done, and how he has saved us, and how the story ends, and ultimately the story ends with us and him in heaven forever if we're his, that it's got such a beautiful ending that just ought to flow out of us. But the third thing is we're going to participate in a joyous reign. Isaiah writes this in a passage all about Messiah to come. He says, "For to us a child is born, to us a son is given. And the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called," notice what he's going to be called, "he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, and Prince of Peace." Of the greatness of his government and peace, there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and with righteousness from that time on and forever. And the zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this. Okay, that passage is one of those passages that we could probably spend a whole hour on. And it's a passage that is looking forward to the birth of Messiah. And it's a passage that's going to say, here we got Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Prince of Peace. But it's also a passage that says, here is the reign that he's going to bring. I'm sure there's some allusions to the church in that. But there are also some allusions to what comes in the future. And in the future, there is going to be this eternal reign, and it's going to be an eternal reign of justice and righteousness. Or maybe to say it better, there's going to be this eternal reign of peace, and it's going to be found in Jesus. That it's going to be found in the one who came to not only bring peace between us and God, but came to bring peace between us and each other, and ultimately to bring us to a place that is solely of peace. And I don't know about you, but I long for that. in a world that is rough, in a world that is broken, in a world that is sinful, I need to be reminded that there is coming a day when all of that stuff is taken care of. And because of Jesus, and because, yes, of his birth, and because of his life, and because of the way he lived, and because he could become the perfect sacrifice for sin, and because God so triumphantly raised him from the grave, I know that peace can come not only here, but I know that ultimately peace will come. And it reminds me of a few things. The fact that Jesus can bring peace on earth even now, he can bring peace in my heart, he can bring peace between brothers, he can bring peace if they're willing between whoever is opposed to each other, but it reminds me of the lordship of Jesus. We've been talking about the lordship of Jesus all through this Colossian thing. Remember, Paul has kept saying he is all in all. Maybe he says it a little better even in Philippians. Oddly enough, this too is a song from the New Testament. Here's what Paul, the poet, writes. Who being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used for his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very likeness of a servant, and being made in human likeness and being found in an appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So there's the whole gospel story. Therefore, God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus, every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue acknowledge that Jesus Christ is Lord to the glory of the Father. It's the understanding of what Christ has come to do and how he was willing to do what the Father had asked and submit to the plan of God and then go through the cross and humble himself to that point, but then to be where he belongs, exalted to the highest, because he's Lord. Because he is the centerpiece of all that God has designed. But then I'm also reminded that he's made some great promises. So Brandon's been reading from 1 Peter. If we kept on reading, you would get to verse 8 of 1 Peter chapter 1. Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with inexpressible and glorious joy. For you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Okay, I'm pretty big on keeping my word. And I think you ought to be too. If you say you're going to do something, you do it. If you say you're going to take the trash out, take the trash out. Sorry on those times I don't. When you say you're going to commit to being a better dad, do it. When you make an oath, when you make a promise, when you stand before a preacher and a family and you say, I take this woman to be my wife, or I take this man to be my husband, you've made a promise. The thing I love about God is he has never reneged on a promise. I've read the Bible over and over and over a whole bunch of times, and I can't find one single time where God said, here's what I'm going to do, that he didn't do it. For you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls. Talk about joy to the world. Talk about what ought to bring an internal smile, that ought to bring a little bit of peace, that ought to bring maybe even happiness to us, to know that God has taken that which has separated us from him and that we deserve to be punished for, and he's removed that and he has saved us, and it's his promise. That his promise is going to be, here you are, and you don't see him, but you have faith in him. And again, that idea of having that faith in him and believing in him is more than just some general acknowledgement that God exists. But having this faith in him, this belief in him, brings inexpressible joy because the end result is we're saved. And that's the promise of God. And someday when I'm on my last breath, and someday when maybe my life is coming to a conclusion, if I'm able to fathom what's going on then, what I want more than anything is to have the joy in my heart that says God's going to do what God said he would do because he loves me and because I love him. But then the last thing from this song is I think we're going to have perpetual joy. I love the word perpetual. Perpetual means it just keeps on going. I'm reminded of what Paul says in a little paragraph I wrestle with, and we're not going to read all the paragraph, but he's going to say, "Rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice." Next line is going to be, "Don't be anxious for anything." And that's where I start to maybe falter a little bit in my own faith. Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say rejoice. James would say in James chapter 1, "Consider it all joy when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces," and then he goes on from there. Do you live your life marked out by joy? No matter the circumstance. Let me put that all together again without a pause. Do you live your life marked by joy no matter what the circumstance? When I first started grad school, I was working an odd job. And that odd job that I worked across a, he was in his early 70s. And I thought he was ancient. Now I think 70 is the new 50. And that's what I am, so I'm ancient. I was working across from this old man, and I remember the first day they said, "Okay, here's your desk," and through this window, you know, I did the books that came in, he did the stuff that went out, and through this window, all I saw for 6, 7, 8 hours a day was this old man. And I thought, this is going to drive me nuts. And then we started talking. And he started telling stories. And to this day, I don't know if I've ever met a more joyous man than Lonnie Bell. That was the name of the old man through the window. He started telling a story of how his wife got sick when he was 45. How he was trying to run a farm and trying to support his family, and his wife got sick with cancer and within a year died. And that kind of sent his family into a spiral, and he had a child that went off the rails because of the loss of his mother. And the child that went off the rails got into alcohol and got into drugs and got into chaos, and there was a period of time that he didn't know where his child was. And then a few years later after that, he because he was worried about a child and because he was trying to raise two other kids, he lost some track of the farm. And eventually, after a bad year of cotton harvest, the farm was repossessed. And so here was this man who in the course of 3 years had lost his wife, his oldest child in a sense, and now his livelihood and his farm, and he went to work at a bookstore making $8 an hour shipping packages out. And in spite of all of that, his heart was full of joy. And so I'm this young kid who's freshly married and who's going to graduate school and seems to have everything kind of lined up in his life. And I keep looking at that old man saying, how on earth can he be full of joy? It's because he knew the end of the story. He knew the end of the story that God was going to take care of him, and he knew the end of the story that God was going to take care of his wife, and he hoped that the end of the story for his son would be that he would be the prodigal who would come home and would get his life back in order. And thankfully, in the course of us working together, his son came home. But he knew the end. And so his joy was perpetual. His joy was flowing when time was great, and his joy was flowing when the cotton crops were in, and his joy was flowing when the children were little and running around the house, and his joy was flowing when he had the wife of his youth, and his joy was flowing even when all of those were taken, because it wasn't just found in those things. And that's the kind of faith I want to have. I want faith that finds joy, not in the things that everybody else may find joy in, but I want faith that says, here is where my true joy lies, and it impacts everything else. Because those are the things that matter the most. And that's your story. Those hard moments in life that God has walked you through, those moments in life when in spite of yourself, God got you to somewhere. Those moments when you couldn't do it on your own and God has got to step in. Those moments when you finally surrendered control. Those are the moments that bring us joy because of the God that we serve. Okay, I hope all of that puts this song into a better place than just a Christmas song we sing between Thanksgiving and New Year's. So what I want us to do, this is not our invitation. I'd like us to stand and we're going to sing the whole song as it's written from the 1700s. So Kent, come and lead us.